You are listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. When do children begin to learn? Believe it or not, school readiness begins in the womb. Decades of research show that the first few years of life, including the prenatal months, are the most important for healthy brain development and success in school. Unfortunately, too many of our kids aren't getting the boost they need for their healthy growth and development, especially during the most critical development stage, the infant and toddler years. This month, Arkansas Advocates will be releasing its most recent report, What Our Littlest Learners Need to Be School Ready. And as a preview today, we will discuss some of those critical aspects of early childhood development and education. We are joined by four guests: Dr. Jenny Blankenship with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, Dr. Kathy Pillow-Price, Arkansas Home Visiting Network, Dr. Nikki Edge, UMAS, and Arkansas Association for Mental Health, and Jackie Govan, Arkansas Head Start State Collaboration Office. Sorry about that. Thank you for joining us. Can y'all quickly start by going around and introducing yourself and talking quickly about your work?
Hi, this is Jenny Blankenship, Education Policy Director for Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. And we are a nonprofit organization that does independent research on a range of issues affecting children and families. Everything from access to health care, education, juvenile justice, after school and summer programs. So we work to help influence policy making at the state capitol and other state agencies to help them pass laws and policies that take care of our most vulnerable population, especially young children.
And I am Kathy Pillow-Price. Excuse me. And I work for Arkansas Children's Hospital as the director of the Arkansas Home Visiting Network. And we provide services that support families and provide parenting education in the homes for families that have children prenatal up to age 5.
Hello, my name is Jackie Govan. I'm director for the Head Start State Collaboration Office. And my role is to act as liaison for the Head Start programs across the state, whereby we have about 22. And then also to make sure that quality comprehensive services are provided to the children and families in the programs across the state.
Hi, I'm Nikki Edge. I'm a researcher at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences in the Department of Family and Preventive Medicine. And in that role, I mostly study ways that we can support the social and emotional development of our youngest children, particularly vulnerable children who've experienced traumatic events or other difficult experiences in their life. I'm also on the board of the Arkansas Association for Infant Mental Health.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start from the beginning. What can a mom and other families do to help ensure that a baby in the womb is healthy and developing well?
I would say that getting consistent prenatal care, of course, is one of the main things, and then following doctor's orders. So we want to see mom eating well, sleeping well, and taking good care of herself, and really having honest conversations with the doctor about how she's feeling physically, but also how she's feeling emotionally. So many moms are surprised to learn that depression is super common among pregnant women, among new mothers, among mothers of young kids. In fact, about 1 in 10 children live with a mom who's experiencing depression, and that can have detrimental effects on the developing child as well as the home environment. And so those kinds of symptoms are things that moms can talk about with their doctor and learn how to minimize the impact on family life and on their child.
How often should a mother go see a doctor while she's pregnant?
As often as the doctor says that she should. It varies and it increases oftentimes as you progress throughout the pregnancy.
Usually starts off with monthly visits and then progresses from there.
And if you have any questions today, you can give us a call in the studio at 501-433-0088. So can you talk... along those lines, can you talk about the importance of screenings in early childhood? What types of screenings baby and toddler should receive?
Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that children receive developmental screenings, that mothers are screened for depression, that we do screenings for social determinants of health, and that we also screen for family strengths. Some of the most important, I believe, are the developmental screenings, and they suggest that we conduct these at 9, 18, and 30 months, or whenever a concern is expressed. In addition, we should probably be doing autism-specific screenings at 18 and 24 months, and social-emotional screening is also recommended at regular intervals.
And in the early Head Start programs, they also do the vision and hearing screening as well.
And Kathy, you mentioned a couple of things. Can you elaborate on what are developmental screenings and what are social determinants of health? Anyone can answer.
So developmental screenings help parents and physicians and others know when a child is behind in their development, in their language development, or their gross or fine motor development. So we all know that if you've raised more than one child, they don't always talk at the same time or take their first steps at the same time. There's a wide range of what's normal and typical. And so it can be hard to gauge when are you getting outside of what's normal or typical, and when might a child need some extra supports to catch up developmentally. And so a developmental screening can really help you pinpoint that. What should a child be doing at this age, and when is there a sign that they might need extra support to catch up with their same age peers?
And social determinants of health, what is that exactly?
So those are all those things that we know can negatively impact the healthy development of young kids. So if they're living in poverty, if they're living with domestic violence, if there are other difficult things going on in their environment, if their community doesn't have healthy foods, all those things can impact their health and development.
And we'll talk about in just a few minutes about what services are provided if that is the situation. Does health insurance cover the cost of all these screenings? I mean, what do parents have to pay out of pocket, and what is covered with insurance?
In the early Head Start program, all of the screenings are paid for the families. And if there are issues with the children that you heard Dr. Edge mention, then the families are responsible for those.
Same in home visiting. The screenings are provided as part of the home visiting services, and I know that Medicaid has these required as covered benefits. I'm not sure about private insurance.
I think most insurance has some coverage, but it'll vary by plan.
Right.
For parents who are on the fence about getting these screenings for their children, what would you say is the real value of getting these? I mean, in the Little Learners report yet to be released, we talk about the long-term impact of these sorts of things. So what's the long-term impact of getting screenings and making sure your child is meeting all these standards?
Well, the reason it's so important is it helps parents and educators and other caregivers intervene early on if they see any sort of problems with the child's normal path of development, whether that's a vision problem or a behavioral problem or something like that. The children are far less likely to need remediation or be placed in special education services if they have those screenings early on and their needs are addressed in a more timely fashion than waiting until they're already school-aged.
Early prevention prevents problems.
And what are signs that parents should look out for to see if their child is falling behind in one of these categories?
One of the things they really should look at is the results of those screenings. And most of the programs, especially in early Head Start, they make sure that they cover the results of those screening thoroughly with the parents.
One of my favorite tools for this is the Centers for Disease Control website. If you Google CDC milestones, you parents can access free milestone checklists that they can look at themselves and say, you know, for example, if you have a one-year-old, it'll tell you that most one-year-olds can say mama or dada. They can wave bye-bye. They can crawl and they can pull up to stand. And so then you can say, okay, if my child isn't doing that, then it's a sign for me to talk to my pediatrician and think about whether my child might need some supports. And so I, you know, always had those on hand when I was a parent, was always just kind of checking, do things look on track? And it's just real straightforward and common sense kind of stuff that parents can look at themselves. And if it's not on track, say to their pediatrician, I think we need a screening. I want to check this out further.
That sounds really helpful for parents who are first-time parents who have nothing to compare it to as well.
We also have, and we can release this to anyone, but we send out to our early Head Start programs, and that's the stages of growth and development. And just by looking at that chart, if they see that their child is 8 months old and not doing those things that's on the chart, then they have the opportunity to go ahead and check it out ahead of time.
I was just going to add that the Arkansas Better Beginnings website, which is a program that's run by the Department of Human Services, it has a wealth of resources about what parents can do if they see that there's some sort of developmental delay or help prevent that from occurring. Everything from how to help your child sleep, nutrition issues, play, behavior, and early learning activities. So I wish that I had seen their website when I had a toddler, because there's a lot of really good tips on their webpage, and it's at arbetterbeginnings.com.
And again, if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. So a lot of people have anxiety and stress about talking to their doctor, but when it comes to their child, it's really critical to make sure you have an open line of communication with your doctor. And so what advice would you have for parents to make sure that they're effectively communicating with their doctor and both asking the questions the parent needs to ask and getting the answers they need from the doctor?
Well, one thing that I like to do is be prepared when I go into my doctor. Make sure that I have my concerns listed out, my questions listed out, and that I'm prepared to be specific with the doctor about what's going on, because I know that their time is valuable, my time is valuable, and we're both wanting to get to the best answer for my child. So, for example, instead of just saying, you know, my child is sick, I will be able to tell them they started running fever about this time, and you know, it's been running about 100 degrees, and give them specific examples. So I make sure that I jot down questions and concerns before I go in, and so I'm prepared to bring up everything that needs to be brought up.
I agree with Kathy, but I would add to that, when you're talking or communicating with a doctor, and if there's something that you do not understand, you know, don't be afraid to ask. And I agree that the doctor's time is valuable, but when he starts calling off these terms that I do not understand, mm-hmm. I need him to explain them to me. And parents need to know that it's okay to ask.
And remember that you're the expert on your child. I really like that advice, Kathy, to be specific. I think, like, for example, if you have concerns about your child's development, you can take in that developmental milestones checklist mm-hmm. that you downloaded from the CDC, and you can say, I'm not seeing this, and I'm not seeing this, and I'm feeling concerned, and then start that dialogue.
Okay, going to education, there is a lot of learning that happens before a child even attends pre-K. Can you talk about what are positive early learning experiences, what parents can do at home to make sure their children are getting the knowledge they need as infants and toddlers?
Sure. When we talk about early learning experiences, we're really focused on the development of cognitive abilities and the things that help lay the groundwork for language and reading and helping toddlers become ready for pre-K and kindergarten and beyond. So that includes everything from access to quality childcare, early Head Start, access to books in the home and in the school, and just literacy activities between parents and children. And the reason why this is so important is because the most critical period of brain development occurs during the first 3 years of life. So that's when 85% of your core brain structure is formed. And as Nikki said earlier, the quality of these early learning experiences has a very strong influence on a range of indicators later on, whether health, social, emotional learning and behavior, and economic outcomes later on. So, and this is especially important for babies in low-income families. Researchers have found that poverty diminishes brain growth in these earlier years, and about half of all babies in the U.S. live at or near the poverty line. So it's really important to make sure that they have those early learning experiences that can enrich their development at a very young age.
And I'll just add that early learning experiences don't look very academic. So when you're thinking about building a baby's brain in a way that sets it up to be ready for school, you're talking about the basics of good relationships between parents and kids. You're talking about the basics of being consistently responsive to children's needs. So when they are, you know, show that they're hungry and they're quickly fed, when they cry and they're promptly responded to and soothed, they learn that the brain is, that their brain learns that the world is safe and predictable. They can relax and explore their environment and learn. And that's how, you know, some of that earliest development comes along, and it doesn't have to look, you know, like flashcards with toddlers. It can just look like responsive, consistent, predictable caregiving.
So you don't have to have the baby Einstein.
You don't have to have the baby Einstein.
You know, I couldn't agree more. Our most important job, that especially that first year, is to teach babies how to feel loved, mm-hmm. and to make them feel secure. And what they need is a warm, loving, attached relationship. And parents play a critical role in that. And, you know, we're talking about pre-K and we're talking about school success. But one of the things we've got to do is start in the home with the parents, teaching them that you're the baby's first teacher. And as long as you're loving them, taking care of their needs, and meeting them in a warm, responsive way, you're doing a great job getting them off to a good start.
And I can give you an example of that. We just launched in October our Fatherhood Mentor program. We are in five high schools across the state where young males that are in high school have children, and these are infants and toddlers. And when we talked about the brain research, especially when we got into the serve and return, you know, we did a pre-assessment with these young men, and one of the questions was, should you talk to the baby while the baby's in the mother's womb? And the young gentleman from Texarkana says, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But once we explained to him and talked about serve and return and talked about the brain development, and he said, you mean to tell me by just talking to my baby, the baby's brain is developing? And so many light bulbs went off at that very first. I've traveled the state to try to be at each of the first mentor sessions. And so these young men, they just didn't know. And so we talked about we showed them a video on the serve and return, and it was just fascinating to watch them. They are really into it, because a lot of male fathers think that they're supposed to wait till the child is walking, running, and they're afraid to hold the baby because the baby may break, or, you know. So these are young males who this is real in their lives, and it's an eye opener for them. Mm-hmm. So I agree.
It's incredible watching parents develop. I know Jackie's heard this story, but when my last child was born, my husband's first child, he had no experience with babies. And he came home one day, and I really needed a break, and she was fussy, and I handed her off, and he said, what do I do? And I said, sing to her, talk to her, but I'm going to take a shower. And when I came out, he was singing the Star Spangled Banner. He's going to kill me for telling this on air. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I read on the news the other day that most people don't know the words to the Star Spangled Banner. So he started very early, but it was incredible watching him learn how to read to her, how to talk to her, how to sing to her, and
just engage.
Engage. Mm-hmm. Engage.
That's great. Besides loving your baby and talking to your baby and making sure the baby's getting screenings, is there anything else in those early years that parents can do at home to make sure that their child is developing properly?
I think one aspect of development we sometimes forget about is social and emotional development. So one of the most important things that we can do is remember that children are not born knowing how to manage big feelings. Toddlers don't know how to manage anger or frustration. They won't get that by osmosis, and we have to do direct teaching of that. We can model it when we stay calm when we're upset, or when we show them how we can regain our calm when we are feeling stressed or distressed. We can provide them models of good problem solving, how to solve a conflict without raising a voice. We can show them how to identify with their feelings, how to express their feelings, that they can use their words to express their feelings instead of hitting, kicking, or throwing. And so we have to remember that we have to teach those skills just like we would teach those pre-literacy skills or those pre-math skills. And, some of the infant mental health associations have good resources for remembering, not to forget that domain of development. And we want your child to be school ready in all ways, not just in those traditional academic ways.
Well, while we're on that subject, I've been talking to a lot of early childhood education providers recently, and a lot of them have been mentioning conscious discipline. Can you talk about that and what that is exactly and how parents can learn more?
So conscious discipline is a really great training program for teachers and also for parents, but it's widespread among teachers in our pre-K programs thanks to support from our Arkansas Department of Human Services and from A-State University. And it is a little bit like what I was talking about a minute ago. So it helps teachers shift the way that they think about managing classroom conflicts. So a classroom full of pre-K kids is going to be full of conflict all day long. And it helps teachers understand that those are opportunities to teach. Teach kids how to regulate their emotions, teach kids how to regulate their behavior, remembering that they aren't born knowing how to do those things. So first it gives the teacher skills to manage her own self, because managing a classroom of pre-K kids is one of the biggest, most challenging jobs that there is, and the teacher has to be able to remain calm and model that for the kids. And then conscious discipline gives her activities and routines that she can use in the classroom to create a school family feeling, so that children feel safe, they feel connected to the teacher, they feel connected to each other, and that's really going to support their social and emotional development and help them help their brain get set and ready to learn. And so it's a great program for teachers. There are versions for parents, just not as widespread in Arkansas.
And it's good for any adult, not just the ones that's in the classroom. We did a book study in my office with some of the staff from the Division of Child Care at DHS, and just reading and discussing the values that, they incorporated in conscious discipline is just amazing. And it helps you to set the stage for, just doing your own job, just working with other people, just getting along and not being that person that creates problems all the time. Mm-hmm. It really gets you outside of the box so you can see not just from your perspective, but other perspective as well.
And parents of teenagers like myself,
oh my
gosh, yes. will know that the same strategies are highly effective.
That's right. That's why I follow them on Facebook.
And again, if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. Kathy, can you talk about what home visiting programs are and how parents can access those?
Yes. Home visiting is a network of programs. We actually have 6 different models that we deliver in Arkansas right now, that we deliver in local communities that targets families that have immediate needs. It gives parents needed tools so they can be better parents for their children. Home visits are provided to parents with children that are not yet in kindergarten and addresses issues like maternal and child health, positive parenting practices, child development, safe homes, early literacy, school readiness, and a whole lot more. And it provides a lot of benefits. It improves the quality of life for children, families, and even entire communities. And it helps parents do a better job of being their child's best advocate and their first teacher.
And how can parents connect with those resources?
One of the best ways to find out what's available is to go on our website, and that is arhomevisiting.org. And there's a search for programs section there, and they can search by county and find out exactly what's available in their county, and then look at the programs and see whether or not they qualify, or contact the programs directly.
And we have the same thing for Early Head Start,
which is on our website.
Which now it's on your website. And our website is www.arheadstart.org. And ours is pretty set up very similar to what Kathy has shared, but we do provide comprehensive services. And when I say comprehensive services, it's the same as in the centers. We have to make sure that they have the mental health, the health, you know, disability services, nutrition, transition, and the list goes on. But all of those comprehensive services are provided for home visitors as well, home visit programs as well.
And is current funding for home visiting programs able to meet the need of all of the parents who could benefit from these programs? I mean, is more funding needed? What can we do about that?
So currently we're funded to serve about 6,500 families with state and federal funding in our state. About 70% of that state and federal funding is already allocated right now to fund our HIPPE program, which is Home Instruction for Parents of Preschool Youngsters. It's a fabulous program that works on school readiness, but it serves families that have children ages 3 to 5. And we've already been talking a lot how the brain has a lot of formation in those first 3 years. So it starts a little bit later than we like. We have funding right now to see about 1,800 families that have children prenatal to age 3, and that's just not enough. So we're really underfunded for the prenatal slots and for families that have children 0 to 3, and that's where we know we're going to make the most difference. So we need more state and federal funding or private funding to provide services, especially in that 0 to 3 range.
And Jackie, you are nodding your head vigorously when I ask if y'all need more funding for this.
I agree with exactly what Kathy said, because we have so many children and the need is great, and we really do need to include all of our babies.
Okay, well, let's get into once it children start school. There are a lot of different options out there for pre-K education and even programs for littler babies like the Early Head Start program. What are the different options out there for parents in terms of early childhood education, and how can they figure out which one's the best for their child?
You're talking about the programs as a whole, like Arkansas Better Chance?
Yeah, all of them. There's okay. A lot out there.
Yeah, there's Arkansas Better Chance, which is our state-funded pre-K. We have our Early Head Start, which is federally funded. We have our child care, which is from the Child Care Development Block Grant. And then we have faith-based. We have our home visiting program.
We have private programs.
And we have private as well. So all of those, you were asking which is the best and what?
Well, how does a parent, I mean, there are different options, and is the education in each the same? Is there, how the children are taught, is that any different? How do parents decide, again, what's best for their child? Not that one program is better than another. But
well, some are.
Well, some are, okay.
Let me share something with you. In answer to your question, all of the programs that I mentioned are guided by the standards that they have. And we have in the program in the state of Arkansas a program called Equity Leaders Action Network, where we spent the last 2 years really looking at racial equity in the early childhood system in the state. And one of the biggest inequity that we found was that all of these programs are different. What gives you the right to have your child in the highest quality program, and then because mine don't qualify, I have to put them in one of the other programs?
Mm-hmm.
So in answer to your question, because that is one of our largest equities. We do have what's called Arkansas Better Beginnings, and that's our quality rating improvement system. And we have three levels currently. We're looking to at two more levels. We're working on that now, but right now it's just three levels. So a lot of the parents look at Arkansas Better Beginnings to see if the programs across the state are actually quality approved. Mm-hmm. And some of them make their decisions by that.
And how can they find out that information?
It's on the DHS Division of Child Care's website. It's on our website, the one that I mentioned earlier. And then I think, you know, it goes, a lot of information goes out to the programs so that they can take part and become quality approved.
I would just also add that one thing that I always tell parents is once they've used that website and kind of narrowed down their choices, they've identified some quality rated programs that they're interested in, they've got to go visit. They've yeah. got to ask to spend time in the classroom where their child will be, and then you've got to stay a while. You have to stay a while and look. And what you're looking for, first of all, is the relationship between the teacher and the children and the children and each other. You're looking for a teacher who seems to enjoy the children. It's a warm and inviting environment. Mm-hmm. There's warm tones. There's lively chatter. There's not harsh voices. Are the children getting the time and attention that they need? Are their needs quickly responded to? When they cry, can they be soothed? Or are there just too many babies for one teacher to be able to handle? Then you can kind of look around the room and say, okay, the relationships look good. Now, are there enough toys to go around? Mm-hmm. You know, what am I seeing in terms of the stimulating learning environment? You know, but there are places in our state where you're going to be hard pressed to find childcare that's quality rated, but you can still find a quality classroom. You can still find a caregiver that will nurture and love your child, even if it might not be the fanciest environment. Don't be fooled by fancy electronics. That's not what you're right. looking for. You're not looking for the fanciest toys. You're looking for warmth.
And Nikki, I always tell parents, go in there as you're doing the observation and sit in the floor. Yeah. Look at it from your child's eye level and say, would I want to spend 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours sitting in this environment? Yeah. And if the answer is no, it's probably something that you shouldn't put your child in.
Keep looking.
Kathy, that is so true. I am a first-time grandmother, and so I've had to help my son and his wife out. And I did that. You know, I went to the center, and I stayed. And when you see babies crawling in unsafe areas, safety is very key, mm-hmm. you know, in any type of child care. So you want to make sure that your child is safe. And if that safety is not there, I mean, that is the number one thing, especially in early Head Start programs, that you can lose your whole program over. If those babies are not safe, they're going to close you down. So please make sure that the child is safe in the classroom.
And again, if you have questions, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. And Jackie, can you talk a bit more about the findings y'all had with the Equity Leaders Action Network in terms of racial equity in early childhood education?
Absolutely. As I said before, the different types of child care programs across the state was the one of the recommendations that we've actually met with the governor's office yesterday. And so we're going to put some things in place to start working on those. Another one was the achievement gap between African-Americans and whites. And then we looked at some of the things, the recommendations that we had. We've already completed, like making sure that racial equity was included in our professional development registry and the workforce teacher competencies. So we've already done that. They have not been approved yet. So there's several different, there were about 20 recommendations. We went across the state and we surveyed parents, we surveyed teachers, we surveyed administrators. And then we also did equity cafes and we analyzed all of that information. And that's how we came up with, some of these recommendations that I'm sharing with you now.
I'll also just add to that that there is strong national data that suggests that there are serious inequities based on race and ethnicity and how discipline and exclusion mm-hmm. from the classroom is handled, and even in early learning environments. So we know that 4-year-old African-American boys are at highest risk for being permanently excluded from our early learning environments for behavior that looks very much the same as the other children in the class. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that a lot of states are looking hard at, including here in Arkansas.
All of our recommendations are actually centered around that. Thank you, Nikki, to work with African-American males. I talked to the House and the Senate, the Joint Committee, to share the findings from all of the analyzed data. And our charge was to really, we work closely with Division of Child Care. They launched Behavioral Health. It's been about a year
about 18
and a half.
Months.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since we launched that, and that has made a big difference. And that's a program where if they have behavior issues in their early childhood facilities, that they have a behavior help number that they can call, and they can get the help over the phone. They can also reach out to Nikki's program for Project Play for the social emotional piece, and then Arkansas State University does the training to go in and provide training and technical assistance for the program.
We've seen about 400 kids at risk for expulsion be referred into that program, and we've been able to prevent expulsion in more than 90% of those cases.
Awesome. That's very sad that even in toddler age, you can already see the achievement gap.
Absolutely.
Between students.
And then even the behavior rate for early childhood triples the number for K-12. It's just really, really sad. But we're working on those things and hopefully to see a big difference in the next couple of years.
And you think the legislators and governor are responsive to your report?
Very responsive. I didn't get the high five on the funding, but we're doing the research and it was a very great meeting, and it's very positive, and it's going to help us get a lot of things achieved. We've done a lot of work, and we don't want to drop the ball because we found a lot of stuff and we really want to address it.
Well, for our callers, it sounds like the Equity Leaders Action Network wouldn't mind y'all calling your legislators and asking to make sure we've got some research to support racial equity for students in Arkansas.
Thank you.
I can say that. So let's move on. Going back to funding, funding seems to be a problem for a lot of these programs. So in terms of high quality pre-K education, what are the funding gaps that we're seeing, and where would it be useful for there to be more funding?
I'll speak from the Arkansas Early Childhood Commission's standpoint. Which I'm the current chair of. We've been flat funded as far as our state pre-K initiatives for quite a while now. We've had minimal increases, and it's starting to affect quality. And so where our choices are going to be in the future if we don't get a raise in funding is that the number of slots available for children to attend is going to go down so that we can preserve the quality that's needed in the classroom. When you're flat funded, you can't give raises, you can't buy new equipment, new needed materials, and so it's starting to become an issue of how many can go versus how many can we afford to go and keep it at a quality level.
I completely agree with this kind of flat funding level that we're at now. We have teachers leaving the field and going to work at Sonic because they can make more money, and that's just not that's not sustainable. Right. I'll also add that while we have this problem in pre-K, it's terrible for infants and toddlers as well. It's very expensive to provide high-quality infant toddler care. It takes more teachers to take care of babies than it does to take care of pre-K kids. Parents cannot often afford to shoulder the cost of that alone. And so that's, as we struggle to find funding for pre-K, we are also challenged to figure out how we provide high quality care in the earliest years.
One of the things we have done in the state of Arkansas is provide opportunities for child care, because they have minimum child care license to partner with Head Start. And we have what's called Early Head Start Child Care Partnership programs. We have about five in the states. We have those five consist of rounds one and two, where funding was available from the federal government. So we're really excited about that, because what happens with those minimum child care licensing standards, they have to, once they agree to partner, they have to abide by the Head Start performance standard, which are much higher than the minimum child care licensing standard. So that's one of the things that we've done. And we have programs all across the state, including Division of Child Care as a grantee, that has like three hubs across the state that's also doing the partnership.
And I know several years ago at the federal level, when sequestration happened, Head Start programs across the country lost quite a bit of money. Has that money been made up in years since, or is it still lower than it was before sequestration?
The sequestration was a cut, including my office, but we did get all of that funding back, but there has not been any increases. But all of the money that was taken for sequestration, that was given back to the programs as well as to my office. But we did not get an increase.
There just have not been increases nationally or statewide in quite a while. And it's a mind shift and a culture shift that we need to examine, not only in our state, but in our nation. If we want to remain competitive globally, we're going to have to value our children, value those that take care of them, and put money in those programs.
I think it's particularly a mind shift when you think about infant and toddler care, Kathy. I think, a lot of people think about those early years as babysitting and don't understand
right.
that's kind of that critical period for building the brain in a way that will set a healthy foundation for school and for life, and don't really realize what it takes to provide good care in those early years. And so I think we've helped our policymakers shift down from K-12 to think about pre-K, and now we have to help them shift down further to realize that the brain doesn't start building at age 3.
Right. And we do have to look at other countries and what they do. For example, with home visiting, it's universal in a lot of European countries, and it starts when mom gets pregnant, and it's offered to all families, not just lower socioeconomic or especially vulnerable. All families need support, and in other countries, all families get it.
I've heard before, and I think it might have been from someone in this room, but I won't call them out, that if we had more female lawmakers in the state and in the country, that babies would be prioritized more and more funding would go towards these really critical programs. Like Jenny said at the beginning, 85% of core brain development happens before age 3. So we definitely need to fund these programs. And how can listeners talk to legislators and show the value of these programs?
And I think you can really see how undervalued early childhood education is by just looking at teacher salaries for those who are doing this very complex and important work. And I don't think a lot of people realize that there are huge disparities between salaries for K-12 teachers and early childhood teachers, especially for those who are caregivers for infants and toddlers. And like Nikki said, it's running a lot of people off to other careers. It's taking them from early childhood, sometimes into the K-12. workforce, which, you know, we want to recruit and retain as many quality educators as we can in K-12, but it's even more important early on. So we need to put our money where there's the biggest bang for the buck.
If there are any legislators listening, invest in children. This is the best investment you can make.
Invest early.
Yes, invest early. Jenny, maybe you can talk about this. Arkansas Advocates is actually working to relaunch the Invest Early Coalition.
The Invest Early Coalition was formed a little over a decade ago with all the major stakeholders in the state that work on early childhood policy and provide services to children and families. We're relaunching that, as you said, and trying to get people energized again about not just funding for pre-K, but a broader, more comprehensive strategy for early childhood in general that encompasses everything from early literacy, healthcare, mental health, and getting all of those people together in the same room and deciding what are our priorities during this next legislative session. What are things that we can do on an administrative level with the Department of Human Services to help improve things for our littlest learners? So we will be communicating more about that in the coming months. If you want to go sign up for our email newsletters and our action alerts, you can do that at aradvocates.org or visit us on Facebook.
Go on.
Nikki. I was just going to add that if folks out there want additional ideas for, you know, what are some of the policies that we need here in Arkansas? What are some things that we've identified as gaps in our system? They can go to the Arkansas Association for Infant Mental Health website and download our state strategic plan for supporting early childhood mental health, where we worked with many agencies and across many disciplines to really identify those ways in which we need to strengthen our service system, and identified some really specific sort of policy changes and system changes and supports. So you can take that to your school principal, to your dentist, to your neighbor, to whomever you know, and start to educate them about those needs.
Do you want to mention a couple of those policies in the strategic plan?
Yeah, so some of those we've actually talked about today. So we identified a need for screening where children are. So in every child care center, in every pediatrician's office, wherever children go is an opportunity to screen, not just developmentally, but as Kathy said, for what's going on in the home environment, for those social determinants of health. So that's one. We talked extensively in our plan about the needs in early care and education and some strategies for getting kids into those high quality programs. And we've talked about supporting the mental health of the caregivers of young kids and what needs to happen in the behavioral health arena, for example, to support parents with substance abuse or mental health concerns.
Kathy, did you want to mention something?
Well, I was just going to add, as you're brushing up on the policy recommendations and the information, don't be afraid to approach legislators. I'm not a legislator, but I am an elected official. We don't know everything. We need input. We need advice. We're ready to listen. And that's what we ran for. Mm-hmm. You know, those of us that have ran for some sort of office, we're wanting the people that put us in office to inform us of what needs to be done. And so educate yourself and then go educate someone else.
And you're the most powerful voice. Policymakers don't always want to hear from us all the time. They want to hear from the mom that couldn't find quality childcare for her child, who's going to work and having to leave her child somewhere where she's worried about what's happening to them. That they want to solve those problems for their constituents, for the members of their community. And so I think if every mom and dad told that story, I think we would have a shift in the way people think about this.
I think you're right about solving problems. Most people that run for office, I'm still optimistic. I want to believe they're there because they want to make a difference and solve problems, and but they have to know what they are in order to do that.
And Kathy, I think that's a great point. I've given them a little bit of a hard time on this show about not funding early childhood education and other early childhood programs, but you make a good point. If they don't hear from their constituents about these issues, then they aren't going to think it's important. What they're hearing from their constituents and lobbyists and others, that's what they're going to value. So it's so important that we reach out to our lawmakers and talk about these issues, because yeah, I mean, it may not be at the top of a 60-year-old male legislator's mind about the value of early childhood education. So they do, like you said, Kathy, rely on us to bring these issues to the forefront. And something else that we talk about at Arkansas Advocates is a lot at the state legislature, at the General Assembly, if they get 5 calls from their constituents, they feel like they're being inundated with calls because mm-hmm. they really don't hear from them that much. At the federal level, it's different. They get lots of calls, but at the state level, you can make such a difference if you just call your legislator and talk about these issues. And Jenny, in the Little Learners report, one bill that is mentioned is something that Arkansas Advocates supported in the 2017 General Assembly that would have provided funding for research-based early literacy programs. Can you talk about what that bill would have done?
I think you're referring to the bill that would have given additional funding to the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. It was brought up, I believe it was brought up for a vote and it didn't go anywhere. But anyway, what it would have done is given additional funding for a program in Arkansas that provides free age-appropriate books every month for children from birth to age 5. And their local programs, I think there are 56 affiliates throughout the state, and they hope to expand to all 75 counties within the next year. And each local program must be open to all preschool children in the community, and they have to raise about $25 per child to sustain that program. So they've received some state funding in the past, but there was an effort to provide additional funding, and unfortunately it didn't go anywhere. So hopefully we'll have better success in the next session.
I'm on the advisory board for the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, whereby now we have the Arkansas Imagination Library. We are trying to go statewide. It's going to take us a while. We are saving money so that each of those local affiliates, if they raise half their money, our goal, which it'll be probably in the next 3 to 5 years, is to do the match on the state level for the local affiliate. And Dolly Parton will not come to any state until you get 100%. So we are striving to have it in all 75 counties. We're working towards local affiliate in Pulaski County, which we've never had. So we're excited about that. Dr. Charlotte Green has just been hired as the director for the Arkansas Imagination Library. And we meet every month, and we are really working diligently to try to get things in order so that we could do that. Additional funding would be great. We hired a person, well, I say we, but Dollywood hired a person for 2 years to just do the fundraising. And we didn't get, you know, much money through that. So we now is taking it strategically to really put forth the effort to have a person in Arkansas to really look at, you know, who those funders are, and then share our goals so that we can, you know, raise those funds.
Jackie, I just saw in the paper, I think on Sunday, that the United Way is a new partner in one county in Arkansas. So if there's other donors out there who'd like to partner, how do they get involved? Is there a website or?
It is a website. They just launched it like a couple of weeks before Christmas. And you can also contact Dr. Charlotte Green. She's out of Conway, Arkansas, but her office is downtown, downtown Little Rock. And if you have any questions, you can also contact any of the advisory council members. Please, my website is open. My email address is jackie.govan@arheadstart.org. So please feel free, and I will point you in the right direction.
Okay, one last thing that I want to talk about. We have about 3.5 minutes left. Those early bonds between parents and babies are really critical, but not all parents in Arkansas have access to paid family leave. Can you talk about the importance of early bonding with your baby? What is the current state of family leave in Arkansas, and what can be done to expand access to paid family leave? And you, again, have 3 minutes.
During this last legislative session, we were able to get a bill through that is now in law that gives paid family leave to state employees at a very low cost. So our legislature did recognize the value of having that bonding time in the first couple of weeks in a child's life. What we hope to achieve during the next session is expanding paid family leave programs to a wider share of the population, especially among lower income and working class families who don't always get those benefits through their employer.
I think this is so critical, especially given what we've been talking about the difficulty of finding really high quality care for infants and toddlers. And nothing is scarier than leaving a fragile newborn, in a center where you don't know what kind of nurturing and care they're going to get, and missing that time to develop that healthy attachment that we've been talking about that's going to support the child's brain development and healthy social and emotional development lifelong. It's a really missed opportunity for us in Arkansas.
Yeah, bonding's a process. It's not something that just happens in a few minutes of the day, and unless you're there for it to occur, it's
so special.
It's so special.
And do y'all, with the minute we have left, again, say your website where people can find more information about everything we talked about today?
This is Jackie Govan, and my website is www.arheadstart.org.
And Arkansas Home Visiting Network is www.arhomevisiting.org.
Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families website is aradvocates.org. And again, you can go sign up for our email alerts for events, all of our publications, and how you can get more involved in advocating on behalf of infants and toddlers.
And I can never remember web addresses, so when I need to find the ones that I've talked about today, I Google AAIMH, I Google Arkansas Better Beginnings to find high-quality childcare, and I Google CDC Milestones to find checklists.
Well, thank you all for listening today on our program about what our littlest learners need to be successful, and we will see you again the first Wednesday of next month. Thank you.
Hi, this is Alanis Morissette, and you're listening to KABF 88.3 in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
Welcome to the Bioneers, revolution from the heart of nature.
It was a culture that at its root was a we culture. We with one another, we with everything that was here. And it was a culture that I want to call a home culture. We were home. We were safe. We were connected. How do we undo the homeless culture and come home where it's we again?
It's all alive. It's all connected. It's all intelligent. It's all relatives.
We stand at the threshold of a historic opportunity in the human experiment to reimagine how to live on Earth in ways that honor the web of life, each other, and future generations. It's a revolution from the heart of nature.